You're listening to KTOO's Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is here to talk about the latest production by the Orpheus Project. Welcome, Todd Hunt. Hello.
Hi. Thanks.
Hi. And Haley Duran might be joining us soon, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she will. We're starting a little early.
Yes. So you're here to talk about the opera Alcina premiering this Friday. Why don't you start off by telling me a little bit about the Orpheus Project?
Okay. The Orpheus Project is the organization that was formerly known as Opera to Go. They changed the name a few years ago because we started doing a lot more than just opera. We do concerts and workshops and classes, and also aid other organizations in putting on their concerts or productions or things. So it's like we did a lot more than our name suggested, and frankly, we stopped traveling as much as we did, so Opera to Go was just not very appropriate in so many ways. So that's basically what Orpheus Project is an organization that puts on operas and concerts and also facilitates other groups to do the same.
And what past productions can we blame on you guys?
Oh, gosh. Well, the most recent big production that most people would have heard of is the Princess Sophia opera. Mm. That was our big project last year. It's actually like a 5-year-long project that culminated last year. So we had fantastic audiences for that. And we're very grateful to Juno for showing its support for that. I also did West Side Story a couple, maybe that was 3 years ago now. Those are maybe the most recent. We did another early opera before that, Orfeo, where we had some fun different instruments that we'll talk about later, because Alcina is also a very early opera.
Right. And that's one of your focuses, the Orpheus Project, early music.
Yes.
So let's hear about Alcina, the first known opera written by a woman.
That's kind of exciting, isn't it? This opera was written in 1625. So, wow. It's pushing 400 years old now, which is sort of astonishing to think of. But it's very early in the sense that opera had only been around for just over 20 years by the time this was written. So this is literally early opera. So this predates Handel and those guys that we might think of as early opera. I mean, that's many, many, many years later. So the story is basically there's a guy named Ruggiero, and he's
I want to interrupt you for a second. Yeah. Can you give us the full title of the opera as Alcina?
Okay. So, those of you who might have gone and tried to look for recordings or whatever, looking up Alcina, come up with Handel, and that's not it. It's a shortened name. The full name is La Liberazione di Ruggiero dall'Isola d'Alcina.
Lovely.
Which is basically the liberation of Ruggiero from the island of Alcina.
Okay.
And we just call it Alcina because, that's so much easier.
Okay, now I'll let you get back to
So Ruggiero, who I mentioned, who needed liberation, has fallen under the spell of the wicked sorceress Alcina, and she took him to his island and sort of wiped his memory, and they're just madly in love. And it turns out, they discover, that the entire island is populated by men who have been taken in this fashion for quite some time. But when Alcina gets tired of them, she turns them into trees and other vegetation to beautify the island. So Ruggiero's girl, Bradamante, whom we never meet in the opera, sends the good sorceress Melissa to come rescue Ruggiero from this, and ends up breaking the spell and saving everybody, but not after having to confront a giant band of monsters on an island that's surrounded by a burning sea and a giant flying monster.
And this poster is quite eye-catching. What am I looking at here?
So, that poster, if you've seen it, it's got kind of the fire on the top and the water on the bottom, and it's a period drawing from the time. It's not actually from Alcina or anything. It's not one of the old things. But it sets the tone for what I was just talking about, like where the spell is broken and we see that all of the inhabitants we thought were these beautiful women are actually these horrifying monsters, and the sea is on fire and everything's craggy rocks and everything. So that's where that the idea for the poster came from.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I really like it.
Oh,
it's nice. Yeah. A little scary, but I like it.
It's supposed to be eye-catching, yeah.
So I understand that you'll be using some period instruments mm-hmm. in this opera. Tell me about those.
Yeah, so I have a few guests in town. First is one of our regular people we have come in, Paul Schipper, and he's playing what is called a theorbo. And if you can imagine a lute, an old-timey guitar, you know, with a funny neck mm-hmm. and everything. It's not real big. It's kind of compact, except a theorbo is one of those with this, 6-foot-long extra neck on it. So it's a kind of a double-neck guitar. Those bottom strings are bass strings that is just super long. So it looks really cool, and it has a super cool sound. And it is actually one of the main instruments that was used in the 17th century for accompanying opera singers.
And how did you get a hold of it?
So, yes, I mentioned Paul has been coming. Well, he's been coming here for since 2005, I want to say, in various things. I mean, he's played theorbo a number of times, but the first time he came, he sang in Juno Lyric Opera's production of Barbara of Seville.
Okay.
And that was through a friend of a friend kind of thing. And he showed up and made great friends and loved it here and comes back from New York just about once a year.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And let's see, another guest that's here is Byron Schenkman, who's a harpsichordist from Seattle. He was here last March doing a concert or recital, really, of Mozart violin sonatas with Jeremy Irons. And he loved it here, too. So I said, hey, do you want to come back and play this opera? And he jumped at the chance. So it's fantastic. I mean, having two what we call continuo players in the biz. So those are the folks that do most of the accompanying. So Byron will be playing harpsichord and organ. And Paul will be playing theorbo and a Baroque guitar, which is really kind of like a small guitar. Also, we have a Baroque cellist in town. And a Baroque cello is a lot like a regular cello, except it doesn't have an end pin, so it doesn't sit on the floor. You hold it between your legs. All of the string players are using different style bows that have a different feel to them to kind of give the phrasing that the music calls for. I think. Let's see what else we got. Oh, a cornetto. This is a cool thing. Rick Trostel is playing cornetto. He's one of our local trumpet players. And a cornetto is essentially, it's this funny little thing. I mean, imagine a recorder that's kind of long and bent. So it's like a little curved and it's got finger holes in it, but it's got a really, really tiny trumpet style mouthpiece in it. Hmm. So it's got a very unique sound, sort of like a trumpet,
yeah,
but more delicate. But it's fingered like with regular like recorder holes instead of like valves like a trumpet.
Oh, man, I have to Google all these instruments.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. And of course, a whole forest of recorders.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I wouldn't expect anything less. No, I had no idea you were going to use recorders. That's pretty cool. And I hear that the set is something to see.
Yeah. So the set is very modular. So we've got all of these, they look like go-go dancer cages, but they aren't yet. contact me if you think you need one after the show's over. They're used to signify, like I mentioned before, that folks get trapped as plants and trees and such. And this represents those people being trapped in those things. They also flip around and turn into cliffs, and they turn on their side and turn into the water, and they can roll and do all this fun stuff. So this was all Haley's idea and design, which is super interesting and efficient, really, because we're using essentially six things to do lots of changes. We also have a big boat. We were joking in the pit yesterday that, well, all China has a boat and we don't have ferries. Yeah, sorry.
No.
A really cool chariot that Ernest Eckerson built all this stuff for us. And yeah, he's been great as a technical director.
Fabulous. And you also have some special guests, Vox Borealis and Juno Dance Theater.
Right. Yeah. So Haley is also choreographing. She's got like 16 titles in this, like a lot of us do. And the dancers, the Juno Dance theater group, which is actually mostly the teachers and former teachers and board members and that kind of thing. They add a lot of stylized movement to this because it's the music is very has a very strong dance element to it. And it's one of those that you just can't imagine without dance. But she's using actually a lot more than I even thought that she would. So that's really great. And Vox Borealis is the is Sarah Radke Brown's vocal group, you know, does the Ave Maria things out at the Shrine and other concerts around. But it's like the a cappella group, and they're the core of the chorus.
Right.
Yeah.
And we also want to mention that the opera will be performed in Italian, sung in Italian, with English supertitles, just in case anyone is worried about that.
Yeah, so you'll know what's going on.
Yeah. Why did you choose to do this opera?
Well, it's interesting. So after Princess Sophia, which was the last big thing we did, I was frankly expecting us to be completely out of cash and not able – this would be a rebuilding year and we weren't going to do anything. And we actually – well, we didn't like really make – money on Sophia, but we certainly didn't lose our shirts, and we had a decent amount of money left in the bank account. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's a surprise. We've got to figure out something to do pretty fast. So I started looking around and for things, and I thought, well, it's time to do another early opera because they usually take a you know, less forces. Like the instrumental forces are usually a little bit smaller, and cast is often smaller, and they tend to be simpler to put together. Although this one wasn't the case, and I came across this piece that has been done a lot in the last couple of years, but not so much in the before maybe 10 or 15 years ago. So it's really kind of had its own renaissance here, and so it kept popping up. And I was like, oh, that sounds really fun.
Alcina premieres this Friday, the 21st, 8 p.m., with shows on the 22nd and 23rd at JDHS, Ciudad at Cafe Auditorium, the Amalga Chamber Orchestra, conducted by you, William Todd Hunt, and directed by Haley Duran. So thank you so much for being here today. And
if you
want more information, you guys have a great website at the orpheusproject.org.
Yes.
Thank you, Todd.
Yeah, thanks, Shelley.